I'm going to call Jesus Green Spirit Jesus today because he asks us to think about our connections with him through a familiar image. But it's not an image we usually use to think of our spiritual lives. At least I don't think that I'm a vine branch. I don't know how you see your spiritual life. It's a little bit of a pause here for reflection. There's a quote attributed to Flannery O'Connor that sort of goes like this. Jesus says, "Abide in me. And if you abide in me, you will be my disciples. And you will know the truth. And the truth will set you free. But first, it will make you odd." O-D-D. First, it will make you odd. So it is odd, I think, that we're invited to think about ourselves as green spirits, sharing the same plant life as Jesus. Now, this section of scripture is a part of Jesus's farewell address in the Gospel of John. And this "I am the vine" is the last of the "I am" statements. And it's linked directly to disciples. Not only "I am," but "you are," he says. And there is both promise and possibility in this. So I think that Jesus's first hearers, familiar with the Hebrew scripture, would have heard the use of vine quite a bit, where God was the vine grower and Israel was the vine, and sometimes things went well and the vines yielded good grapes, and sometimes not so much. But those who listened to him would have recognized this creation metaphor, this grounded teaching. But something is happening here in this scripture. There is a shift. The vine grower is still God, but the vine is no longer Israel. The vine is Jesus. And the secret of a productive branch is its secure attachment to the vine. So we're not talking about an attachment to a nation, to a people, to a tribe. We're talking about an attachment now to Jesus. So if we're talking about vines, what are the characteristics? And if we're told that we're the branches of this vine, how do we behave? How do we act? How do we live out this mystical approach to our spiritual lives? I picked up my Florida Gardener's Handbook since I'm new to living here full-time and I'm busy making flower beds and vegetable beds and so on. But this is intriguing. My Florida Gardener's Handbook has this to say about vines. Quote, "My, how they get around, those vines. Shameless climbers, stealthy twiners, exuberant clingers, superlative sprawlers, midnight ramblers. The vining lifestyle must be the envy of the plant world. After all, every other plant stays put. Only the vines scramble hither and yon, scampering up trees, across fences and walls, under guardrails, around poles. The book says, look at the morning glories. Look at passion flower vines." End quote. So clearly, There was a lot of energy in this praise of the life of vines. And I'm wondering about connections and extensions, how vines transform their world. I'm going to call Philip a vine branch. We hear about him in the Acts story, a story which connects and extends the Jesus vine in an odd way. Philip is one of the new table deacons in this community of faith. He's an evangelist. He's driven by the Spirit to encounter an Egyptian court official in his chariot reading a portion of Isaiah. These are some odd things, as is the status of the one whose chariot Philip enters. This man is a eunuch, so he was an outsider to all faith traditions. And he has in his possession the suffering servant story, which Philip offers to explain to him because he overheard him reading it. It's pretty odd. And in record time, in the middle of the desert, there is a baptism. And then both characters in this story disappear from the narrative. Well, Philip finds himself in Azotus, and the eunuch's on his way to Ethiopia. We're left to wonder about this strange connection. And you should know that there's a tradition in Ethiopia that the Christian church grew from this man who was grafted to the vine. The drop-in encounter extended the Christian faith, and these details are worth lingering over. We do drop into each other's lives with our faith stories, and sometimes the circumstances are just as odd. As I was leaving a conference in Western North Carolina on the day of the eclipse, I saw a warning light on my new used VW Beetle. I wasn't even sure what what it meant. So I pulled into the first car dealership in Henderson, North Carolina, and prepared myself to deal with the unexpected on my planned journey. The car would need an expert to deal with what was a signal about the tire, and I had no appointment, so I was going to be last in line, and I was a little worried about how much more is this going to cost me since I just dropped a bundle at the conference. Anyway, I sat in the waiting room and read my email, and I tried to slow down my breathing, just let things be. And it was a large waiting room, and there were people scattered all over. And I picked up a magazine, and time passed. And I was in my own little bubble. When suddenly, from across the room, a woman approached me, and she sat down on the little table next to my chair. And she handed me a book that she was reading, and she said, "I'm stuck." The book was a devotional book, one that you might find in the cathedral bookstore. On one page was a little meditation, and on the other page was an image. "My heart just isn't in this," she said. And she described her role. The pastor of her church had told her that her job was to send these devotional pieces out to all of the shut-ins. And the page she showed me was of Jesus and the Good Shepherd, Jesus as the Good Shepherd. And I couldn't figure out why she would be stuck. So I asked her to tell me a little more about her story. Now, before you think that she came to me because I'm a priest, Let me tell you that I had red leggings with orange polka dots on. I had my new very favorite fluorescent green sneakers on. I did not have a clergy shirt on, and there was no sign about my neck that said, "Ask me what your day job is." I just didn't do it. So I tried to listen, and I listened to her story for quite a while. And it was clear that she was stuck in a church where her core was not a match, because there was a lot of bias in that community. And the bias came forth in a variety of ways, but the one that was most painful for her was that a neighborhood organization, I think it was another church, was going to build some small houses for those who were underhoused in Hendersonville. And there was going to be a big community garden, and there was going to be a trade school. And her pastor and the members of her group not only were not supportive, they were dismissive. "We don't want those people here in this town, near our church." So the woman who was seated next to me said she hadn't said anything because she didn't want to hurt anybody's feelings. "They're lovely people," she said. So I asked her to think about times when she silenced herself, when she was afraid to speak out about what she believed. I asked her how many different church communities she had been a part of throughout her life. I didn't tell her what to do. But at some point, she took that devotional book back and she turned the number of pages and she said, "This is who I am." And the picture there was of a brown hand and a white hand joined in friendship. Some pruning was clearly going to happen. Some grafting to another branch of the faith is probably in her future. What an odd connection. What an unexpected encounter. Had we lived out of a green spirit place? As near as I can tell, because I don't have a rational explanation for how this happened. I do know that my car was soon repaired, and it only cost me $39. And as I was leaving, you know, I said to the service manager, I said, "I've had a very interesting conversation here today." And he said, "Good things always happen here." And he handed me his card. And I want to say that his name was Philip, but it wasn't. It was Wayne or something like that. And as I left, I saw her sitting in the chair where I had sat. Her eyes were closed. And I said a silent prayer as I left. Oh, not a chariot, but a vehicle. Not the text from Isaiah, but some other ones. Not a financial officer or a eunuch in sight. And maybe the vine and the branches were growing there and I could not see them. When I first came to Florida in the little bungalow over in San Marco, I built a little gate, a little lich gate, And I planted a passion flower vine because I had seen one somewhere in my travels. And every time we came down from Canada, this beautiful thing would be blooming. This red flower, named the passion flower by the 15th and 16th century Jesuits who first encountered them in South America. It would bloom for each time it would bloom for 3 days. And the clergy saw all sorts of symbolism in the structure of that flower. And until this week, I didn't take it as a message, other than, oh boy, how beautiful. But now I see that it was a faith greeting to me every time I came through that gate, every time I came home, every time I went out from there. And it's clear that our new house is longing for a vine, and I'll bet you can guess what I'm going to go get. Perhaps that vine will tend me. Perhaps there'll be a vine that tends you. Will show me how I am like it. How odd.